That's right there. That's it. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Please, sir, talk into the microphone when you talk.
It's so fucking hot.
I'm going to aim the microphone more.
Shut the fuck up. It's way too hot.
It's too hot. What are we doing here? Cool this man down.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes referred to as the man with the golden blank.
The man with the golden blank.
For all of you match game fans out there. If you write in next week with the right answer, you'll get one of Rob's socks.
I got a few socks to give away, but I'm giving away the ones with holes in them.
You've got a few of them?
A few of them, yes.
We are coming to you from our new hot studio. And we don't mean hot as in it's great. Oh my God, it's hot today.
It's the hottest day of summer.
Yes.
Or the year.
It is. It is. It truly is. I checked the temperature.
It is. It is. And you might be hearing this, I don't know, in the middle of September. I don't know when you people are hearing it. Don't cramp my style, people.
Oh, it's snowing where you are, but it's summer here. See, your weather is wrong.
We're just saying it's blisteringly hot in the studio today. So, but we are coming to you from our new blistering hot studios somewhere not in the city limits,
not
Rob.
In the city limits, outside.
But better than the country.
Better than the country, kind of like underground.
You got to think about that for a while. You know, and it's not in the city, not in the big city, but it's not in the country. Let them stew on that.
Okay,
you know what you got to do? Let them stew on that.
What if they get confused? Frustrated.
Oh my God, they're already that way. We've only been on for 2 minutes and already they're going like, why am I listening to this bullshit?
We do in fact take kickbacks from the Gardening Channel.
I didn't like that. Because that means we just gave them a plug, which is bullshit.
Again.
Only for the 140th time. Now, today's show may not be the best idea I ever had, but we are going to try it anyway. We are going to celebrate the life and art of the recently deceased Robbie Robertson of the band by recently, like just 8 days ago, when we actually did last week's show. He had just died the day before. We will be reviewing the band's 1975 album, Northern Lights, Southern Cross, if I don't pass out from heat exhaustion. Now, doing this episode so soon after one of my all-time heroes has passed away, it's not smart. As things are still very raw, I witnessed that this week, as I will explain later. But we're here, and you're there.
And you're there.
Let's go ahead. We're here to do a show.
The show must go on.
We will see what happens. First off, Rob, I know you're saying, what's first? And I'm going to tell you.
I can't even begin to guess.
Well, you won't. Because this has nothing to do with anything. We're gonna get a little lightness in the show before the heaviness.
Okay.
Ahead, I want to tell you about a link that my friend of mine sent me this week on the computer. Now, this has nothing to do with music, and it has nothing to do with the 1970s, but I thought it was funny. And so, to lighten the mood before we start a very heavy show, Robert.
Me?
Yes. I'm going to tell you, this link was, how do I explain this? It was pictures of people in, I think it was New Zealand or Australia or something like that.
Someplace south of wherever we are.
South of the horizon. And what they were trying to do, or what they did, was set the world record for the most skinny dippers at one time in the ocean. It doesn't matter if it's in the ocean, but in water.
In a body of water.
In a body
Which is
water.
Where you go skinny dip. You
so
don't skinny dip in milk.
That is not the funny part. Seeing a lot of women's bums is not the funny part, or men's bums. As they were going into the ocean. The funny part was something that I realized when I was watching it. There's all these people, maybe from all over the world, trying to break this record. I don't know. I don't even know if they do it every year now. I don't know. If you people know about this, please write in and explain. And we'll, future episode, I will say, hey, so-and-so wrote in and explained what's going on in this. All I know is they were trying to break the record for skinny dipping. The most people skinny dipping at one time at one place. Blah, blah, blah. Now, the thing that struck me funny...
So there was a record before,
huh? I guess. Or they're making a record that's hard to break. I don't know. Who cares?
Who cares?
It's just a setup for the story. It's not the story, Rob. It's a setup for the story, which is, if you watch, and it... I'm sorry, but it's funny to me. If you watch all the women that go there in there, and they go from all ages... And some, they're like four or five women at a time, and they go in and they hug each other, and they're all naked, and they go in there, and blah, blah, blah. And you go, okay, you know, whatever. The guys. All I could think of when I was watching it is there's no better definition of the difference between women and men. Like, the guys go in, okay, they're all nude, and I can just see every guy saying, "Hey, Rick, go way the fuck over there." I go in. We're not holding hands, you freak.
We're setting a record. Stay professional. Keep your mind focused.
Keep your mind focused. There's no even eye contact between the men that go in there. They're all like solo. And even though they may have lots of friends there, they're not talking to them. Because you don't want to speak to another guy with his dick hanging out.
Yeah, no, that might have flew in ancient Greece, but not here.
And all the women are just like kissing each other and enjoying themselves and hugging each other and literally going in hand by hand, like holding hands and going in. And the guys are like, "What the fuck you looking at?"
Yeah.
Hey, John, what the fuck you looking at?
We all know what that's called.
And I don't know. I just thought it was so funny because there was not one pair of guys holding hands, at least straight guys. Holding hands.
No male-to-male contact.
There was no straight male-to-male contact, whereas women who are straight have no problems with that. It's like, hey, let's go in there. Oh, look, do you mind if I touch your vagina? Sure, what the heck. They are so unencumbered by all of this stuff, but straight guys are like, hey, well, what are you looking at? I don't like that way you're looking, John.
Maybe most straight guys don't see it as an encumbrance.
A what?
An encumbrance.
Please elaborate.
Well, maybe it's women with a problem here. Maybe they're too loose, too free.
Oh, you mean like hippies?
Yeah! Out there with their free love. And
I hope we're not driving anybody away thinking that we're not doing actual stuff on this show.
There'll be stuff on the show. We have to get this out of the way first.
Well, wait, I just thought since there's no real funny stuff coming up. You might like this story about the difference between men and women in the ocean. Men and women in the ocean. I remember that album so well.
Men in the ocean. I bet they set the record.
I need to drink. Anyways, not a drink. I need water.
okay. Drink would help.
Last week we did email.
Email we did.
But we didn't have time for the last one because you had to go poo, remember?
Yeah, I was like, may I go foo-foo in the banana patch? I had my arm raised.
And then I said, no, we can't. So, yeah, you went in some sort of canister or something.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the last email now. So this is abbreviated email.
Abbreviated email.
Yeah.
The best kind of email.
Best kind. Short and painless.
One person writes.
Not really like that, but whatever. Okay, I got to get to the right thingamabob.
The
right hooja.
Yeah.
This is email number. This is actually for today. It's email number one. But if it was last week, you'd be email number four. Email
number four.
This is from Dougie or Doogie.
Doogie.
Depending on how he says it, as he calls himself not Doug or Douglas, but Dougie or Doogie. I don't know.
Doogie, I would imagine, would have two O's.
I guess it would, but I just like saying Doogie.
Doogie.
I do. I would call him Doogie. I would.
Yeah.
If I was his friend, I'd say, "Hey Doogie, what are you doing tonight?" He'd go, so and he'd be going like, "Don't call me Doogie." Okay, now I'm calling you Doogie for sure.
how many people have you known in your life that have started sentence with "Don't call me that"?
And then all of a sudden, that's what you're stuck with. Now, Doogie is from Toronto. Poor Doogie. Is that now he's going to be stuck with this? His friends are going to listen to the show, and he's going to say, "Yeah, that's better than Ducky."
I wanted to like show my friends and my email got answered. He kept calling me Doogie.
Okay, Doogie. Now he's from Toronto, the capital of Ontario, but not the capital of Canada. So no. Take that, Toronto. Anybody who knows what the capital of Canada is, if you email me, I will read it and then throw it away. Because I already know. Why tell me?
Yeah, why? You think we're stupid?
So you're stupid. Doogie says, so rude to call him Doogie, but I can't help it now.
He shouldn't have told you not to call him that.
He actually didn't. See, if he did, I would call him double. I'd call him Doogie Doogie.
Doogie Doogie.
Now imagine being stuck with that, Doogie Doogie.
Doogie Doogie.
You're never getting laid with a nickname like that. Never.
Never.
Okay. So Doogie says the episodes being so long is a pain in the ass. Oh, really, Doogie? Well, I'm kind of happy I'm calling you Doogie now. He sets aside an hour every week to listen, and it's always over an hour. Oh, he says, I set aside an hour. Oh, fuck. You know, Doogie, either you're in... you're talking as you or you're talking as somebody else. You can't do both in the same sentence. Because in the first he says he, and then he says I. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know what that sound was. I'm not going to ask. So he says he sets aside an hour every week to listen, and it's always over an hour. What the fuck, guys? Okay, well, you know what the fuck, Duke? Duke. Such stupid stuff makes me laugh. Well, you know, our show is based on quality of minutes, not the quantity on a clock. Now, you may understand this because it seems everything Doogie has to fit into a certain box in your life. But for us, we only think outside the box.
Outside the box.
The box isn't even in the same room as us.
And even where it's too small.
It's too small?
Too small.
What, the room or the box?
The box.
Oh, it's upstairs. You know where the box is? Well, the box is not even here. We're so outside the box, it's upstairs.
It's upstairs above us. Waiting to be used.
We're somewhere else in the house. Somewhere completely... Am I losing everybody on this one? Because there's a box, right?
There's two boxes. We're not.
Rob lost one.
Not even you. Yes. Now, if I lost the one and we're still here, obviously we were not in that box that got lost. Does that help you?
We're in the washroom. Not at the same time, but Rob's in one washroom and I'm in the other. That's how far out of the box we are, you slime ball.
No boxes in the washroom.
There's no boxes in the washroom.
Janitor does his job.
Now, the shows are the shows. It's quality entertainment.
Quality.
And it's not defined by, oh, it's got to be 60 minutes. No.
No.
Today's show should be short because I don't have any segments other than this because I want to talk about the band.
The band.
But that doesn't mean we don't go on and talk for another hour about the band. You understand, Doogie? Doogie, is this getting through to you?
I think Doogie, you're listening to this. I came this close to calling him Doogie Baby. You're looking this all wrong. Now, let's say you go to a store and you order a cake.
Oh, what kind of cake?
A good cake. It's made with sugar in it and some sort of flavoring.
Carrots?
No, there's no good cakes with carrots. Get smarter. There's no good cakes with...
Your
no
mom makes it with carrots, huh?
Yeah, but it's...
Hey, we're losing our audience
that's
here.
That's the devil's cake.
I apologize for interrupting.
Let's say you order a cake and you get 20% more icing than you ordered. Isn't that a good thing?
Doogie.
Doogie? Sorry, I didn't know how to finish that one. Thank you.
Now, I said this last week. I'll say it again this week. I hope that answers your question, Doogie. And now, if you want to write us an email, I don't know why you'd want to write us an email.
It was an answer.
I have no idea why you want to write us an email, but if you do, just send it to... We're just having fun. We don't mean to call him Doogie and stuff like that. We don't mean to make fun of people. It just happens.
Yeah, it just happens.
It just happens.
You're going to blame me? Oh, a shark bites you. Is it the shark's fault?
I didn't get that. Okay, so just send it to soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. That is soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. There are no prizes for reading your email on the air, but you can receive one of Rob's very old socks if you choose to have it.
It occurs to me, those are not prizes, are they?
No. Oh,
okay. They're just things we send people.
Yeah, it's just a gimmick, as the kids say.
Well, I've got a whole book full of postage stamps.
Oh, you know what I didn't do?
You forgot to
put it in. That's why I'm so thirsty. Dang. That's why I'm so damn thirsty, kids.
Now I got to find you something to drink?
No, I forgot to do something, and I'm going to do it right now. And it's kind of a chaotic show today. But that's why I was so thirsty.
You ate caviar.
Speaking of caviar, Rob, how was your week?
Ah, my golly, it was a long, hot week, and I did a lot of dirty work here, there, and everywhere. And then when I got home, I just kind of didn't work anymore, and it was nice. It was nice not working. And then I went back to work the next day, and I did some work, got home, and getting home is always good. I look forward to it, except when I don't.
So today, what we are doing, we're going to talk a little bit about... By the way, that was fascinating. Whatever you were talking about, I wasn't listening. We are talking about Robbie Robinson passed away, unfortunately, last week from prostate cancer. Today we're going to, first of all, we're not going to review the album right away. We're going to talk a little about Robbie and some... the band is... it's a fabric of Canada, very much so, but not in the same way as other bands like the Guess Who, you do nowadays, you hear their songs on the radio constantly. Yep. But when I was growing up and listening to music in the late 70s and even throughout the 80s, you know, they would play, you hear so many band songs now, but they played The Weight and they played Up on Cripple Creek. And I remember, maybe the Shape I'm In. Even for a Canadian band, they didn't play a lot of stuff. It was the band was above everybody else, like, critically. Like, they were the band. Like, they were, the musicians were top-notch. And they were different than anybody else. They were like the Beethovens or the Mozarts of...
The music industry,
and everybody was like below them, and I mean that in that they didn't put themselves that way, everybody else put themselves that way, but their songs weren't played on the radio. It wasn't until the mid 80s and they needed a lot more songs, and then nowadays they play. God, I just, you know what's so funny? I had just written the script for the show yesterday, and I went out to my car to get some groceries. I turn on the radio, Up on Cripple Creek, first song I heard. That strange stuff happens all the time since this show started. I swear to God it happened. It's not unusual, of course, in Canada to hear Up on Cripple Creek. It's just the song that I put on as soon as I turn on the car. And those songs now are just played religiously, like the Guess Who used to, because the band wasn't a singles band. Nope. And they were held in extremely high esteem. And of course, still are. They're considered one of the greatest bands in the world. And they're, I was going to get on a whole rant about things, but I should save that for, I don't know if I should say that tonight. because I really get peeved. I'm going to get on it.
Now they got
trouble. Not at the moment. I want to tell you a little bit about, because it's funny how I can remember the stupidest stuff and yet I can forget about important exams that we had when we were in school and shit. I remember first time I ever even saw, ooh, it's storming outside, just as I'm starting to speak.
We'll have some thunder soon.
We're going to have some thunder soon. Just as we're talking about Robbie, maybe this is a sign. But first time I saw it was in a magazine. We used to go to my parents, had just bought a lake lot about 45 minutes from the big city. And my brother and I were always so bored because there's nothing to do but build stuff, right? Like build the cabin and everything. And we were just young. And he had this, he'd always bring his music magazines. And this, I think, was before I was even seriously into music. And I would read his magazines because there'd be nothing out there. And I read this little blurb saying, Robbie Robertson of the band is getting ready to release a new album. Which would be about 1977, I guess. So that would be their Islands album, which was their contractual obligation album to get them out of their contract so that they could legally break up and everything. Which I didn't know. It's funny, I remember that. It's such an incidental 5-second thing in my life that I've always remembered. And I remember thinking, that's a funny name. Because I knew right away, like, it's Robbie Robertson. It's like, well, that's like Robertson. And that immediately struck me. And of course, it's not what it means. It's just his name that people call him because he's not called Robert. But I didn't know that, of course. I'm 10 years old, but I'm thinking that's a real funny name and cool, though, like to be named Robbie Robertson, like Robert Robertson. And then I thought, what a name for a band, The Band. And the name is The Band. And I said, that was cool. And I like that. And then, what did I first hear? Well, I remember their Islands album when it was released, and that was on the radio. Len Tousen, who had a show from 9 to 12, used to play all this stuff, and he used to play a lot of band. But and then it, really the big thing that happened was The Last Waltz came out. And my sister-in-law used to take me to the movies all the time. And The Last Waltz, even at that age, when it was 1978, early 1978, like May, April, or whatever, this movie was getting so much. I had never heard the band. I to my knowledge, I had, like, their Shape I'm In, I had probably heard, didn't know it was the band, or The Weight. I definitely had heard The Weight by then, and I was going like, but I want to see this because everybody's raving about this movie. Like, you just saw it in the papers all the time. You know, like, oh, this is the greatest rock documentary of all time. And I was trying to get my sister-in-law to go. She almost went, and here would be two people who had no knowledge of the band going. It would have been kind of neat, but I didn't. And then I would see the Last Waltz box set. Three records in the stores, and I always wanted to buy it, and but it's way too much money.
Yeah, for a kid,
way too much money. And one of the few times, this may be only the second time ever that I bought a single. In the summer of '78, they played. They had a studio side on The Last Waltz, kind of like their ending, with some studio songs. And they had a song called Out of the Blue, which I just went nuts for. I just listened to it every time it came on. Of course, it's AM radio, so it comes on quite a bit when it's a hit single. Yeah,
until it doesn't anymore.
And I loved the song so much, and I loved Robbie's vocal. And by that time, I knew it was Robbie, and I knew some of the guys in the band. And I knew, oh, that's Robbie Robertson singing. And I said, he has this great aching voice. And I just love this song. I just thought it was just wow. It got me every time. I can't describe it. It just got me every, and I would actually wait and listen to it. And then I would wait and listen to it again. Finally, I wanted to hear this song so much, and I couldn't afford the box set. One of the only two times I ever bought a single, because I just had to have it. Which was Out of the Blue, which is still one of my all-time favorite songs. And then I saw a clip. I don't want to get too long-winded here. Then I saw a clip that year on the midnight special, late at night, of Up on Cripple Creek from The Last Waltz, which was incredible. And I said, wow, this is kind of something. This is wild. And but I kind of stored all that away, and things kind of moved on. And then in 1983, the band got together. I still wasn't a band fan, so to speak. I liked their songs from radio, but I hadn't bought anything really except for that single. And the band came to town on their reformed tour, but without Robbie Robertson, of course. And I didn't go. I was too young. But that's when I bought their Stage Fright album. And I liked that. I really liked it a lot. But what clicked with me, I think, which what clicked with anybody, is I finally saw The Last Waltz on PBS. One of the few things that PBS showed that I would watch. All you PBS lovers, I know, you can write emails if you want. And I saw it on their, they showed the movie, and I taped it on VHS, and I watched it over and over again. And I thought, this is brilliant. Robbie's so fucking cool. He's on The Last Waltz, and he's talking, and he's so fucking cool. I said, I want to be just like that. I can't be that cool, but fuck do I want to be like that. And then he looked like a movie star, but he was a rock star, and he talked like a philosopher, and he said the greatest things. He said things that you wish you could come up with, and I'm going, fuck, I wish I was like that. Then he would play guitar on The Last Waltz, like, holy fuck.
So effortlessly.
And I was going like, wow, if I could play guitar like that, even though I never really wanted to be a lead guitarist, I was going, if I did, that's how I'd want to play. I was hooked. I went and bought all their albums when I could find them, the original pressings. I got all the band albums on the original pressings. I was hooked, as again, like most people were, from seeing The Last Waltz, who came from our generation, you know what I mean? Yeah. Who wasn't around until the band did The Last Waltz, really. And then I followed him in his solo career and everything, and I bought all his solo albums. He means so much to me. His demeanor, the way he wrote songs. I love that he said one of the things that I will always remember, and I've quoted this to Rob many times, when he got into that friendship ending battle with Levon Helm, who Robbie forgives him for, because he said that Levon was going through troubles and drug addiction, and when Levon's mad, he wants to blame somebody, and he said, you know, Robbie didn't write those, he should have gave like credits on the songs, and I got no money from that because he took all the credit on the songs. And Robbie, I read so many things this week. I have never seen so many articles on one person, probably since Bowie died, if not even more than that. And I read all of these, 30, 40 of them, all these obituaries and columns on Robbie. And it always stood out to me that, he said very directly, every song that we did, I brought in pretty much done. And we then arranged it, and that was how it was done. And I even gave Levon credits on songs that he did. He didn't write songs. I even gave him credits on songs, a couple of songs, co-writing credits, because he was there, and I thought, well, that's a nice thing to do. I'll give him a co-writing credit. But things got so out of hand, of course, that Levon didn't even want to be in the same room as Robbie, because he thought Robbie was taking all this money for all the publishing and all that shit. And Robbie was just going, I wrote the songs. Now, I know, this is one of the things we know as musicians. When you're in a band and you write a song, you write a song. Unless you come in with ideas and say...
Yeah, and start to come up with stuff in the studio, right, and enjoying stuff there. Mostly...
Exactly.
I got lyrics, I got the melody, and... that's most of the song.
Now, and Rob has done this once or twice, mostly me and Rob always bring our stuff in, and the song is written, and then it's up to the band to kind of come up with stuff.
Add up the extra parts in between the vocals, right. The intros, outros.
There's a couple times that Rob has had an outline, but he knows kind of what's in his head, and he say, okay, if you can come up with something really cool, that'd be great. But I would never take a writing credit for taking something cool, because there'd be nothing to build upon if it wasn't for Rob building it in. You know, saying, oh, you know, there's a certain middle part here that I like, and I would say, okay, if I did this, I would say take that, just because I would have nothing to build on if you didn't tell me that you needed something here.
If the guy comes up with something really, with some chord changes and something that actually adds a part to the song, that's different. But mostly it's kind of like, well, we need something at the beginning, do some noodling, okay. That's not
writing.
And
I'm going to tell you the thing that always got me, and I always say it to Rob when I get a chance, because he agrees to be 100%. And it's something that Robbie said that I've carried with me for years, which I always believed in, but to hear it is different. He says, I bring the songs in, and then they do the arrangements. And then somebody said, or somebody asked him a question, well, they want Lee Vaughn saying that they should get money for that, for arranging the songs. And he goes, no, that's their fucking job, is to arrange it. And boy, did I agree with that. I already knew that. But to hear him say it, like one of the best songwriters of all time, say, no, when you're in a band, that's your job.
He has to come up with a part that you want to play.
What do you expect Robbie to not only write the words and music of the song, but also to write your parts?
Here's your alternative. I'll bring my song in and I've already got your part written. Bon appetit.
If that's the way it is, you might as well just grab an instrument and play the whole thing instrument by yourself.
Or, I just don't write any songs. You can write all the songs, which you're not going to do.
Yes, exactly. That's basically where me and Rob were at. It's like, me and him wrote the songs. I wrote like 85%. Rob wrote like 15.
How about consistent two songs in a row?
And Robbie was just like me. And that's why I identified and why I took his death so hard, is that he was just like me. And that he said, I wanted everyone to write in the band.
Yeah.
They just didn't.
Yeah.
They totally stopped. And I was begging them, literally begging them, to help me, not to write my songs, but to write songs. Just like I loved when Rob brought songs. I didn't love so much when other people brought songs because they were bad, but I wanted them to still bring in songs.
Yes.
And it's just that Rob was usually the only one who did. I love that. I wanted every song to be, if it could have been a whole album, to be three,
yeah,
you know?
That's what I wanted. Three songs.
But nobody did except for Rob, and only, and the ratio was always like, if I had 20 songs or 15 songs, Rob would have two or three, which were good, which I'm not complaining about, because his two or three songs was always exemplary. So I always wanted to put his three songs. That's like 100% of his material went on compared to maybe my, like, you know, 70%.
Low rate of proliferation.
And I love that. And I love that there was a difference in our songwriting. I loved everything about it.
I like bands. I've stated this before, that everyone's a contributing songwriter, because it just gives the band such unique flavor.
Oh, yeah. And the best thing, I remember one day I came in, we were doing an album. I think it was our third album. And I had laid down the bed track just on acoustic. It was either acoustic and the vocals on a song. And I left it. And we couldn't at that time, we couldn't fit people in the same studio, because we were using Tom's studio, remember?
That's right.
And we could only get one or two people in the studio at a time. So people would have to come on their own and add parts. And you didn't know what which I loved.
Yeah.
You didn't know what they were doing. I wrote a song and I had it written as a moody, very moody song. And had kind of performed it wasn't really a demo. It was really the bed track for the song, which I think I would erase later and do better.
Yeah.
But it was for everybody who came in, and it was totally different, but in a good way. And I just went, holy smokes, this is better than the song I wrote. That's what they're supposed to do. And I applaud them, because I played with great players, and they added to the song to make it better, which is what I want them to do every time, and what Rob wants them to do when he brings his song in.
Surprise.
So when Robbie goes like
fuck, that's your job. What am I? Are you just guys just going to take heroin and snort coke while I do all the work? You want me to go on tour by myself too? Like, what the fuck do you want from me? Like, seriously, you won't write? And yet you want credits on the arrangements. Like, holy shit. And he does admit, hey, they're pretty fucked up. And that's why the band ended, is because things were fucked up. People were all, everybody was taking stuff they shouldn't have been taking. People were doomed to die, especially going out on the road. And he made the right decision. He said, listen, you guys aren't pulling your shit together. And going on the road is making it worse. So I'm going to end it. I'm not going to end the band. Well, let's just get together and make records. Maybe make the occasional appearance. And maybe, if you guys pull your shit together, we can do some shows, you know, in the future. But once they did the last waltz and kind of finished the tracks for the album, everybody was just kind of like, they never came back. Because Robbie tells a story like nobody tells a story. When he told the story about how he was... had set up, I guess it was a couple of years later, he had set up a meeting to see where everybody was at. Everybody had done their solo album and everything and done their solo thing. And he said, let's get back together and see what we can come up with. And he sat there in the studio and nobody showed up. Nobody showed up. And he waited all day. He waited all day. And he guess said, you know, I didn't say it was the end of the band. And I guess they have other things to do, either with their career or either with their extracurricular activities, with partying. And if you guys don't care, then that's it. I guess that's over. So even that, their claim, even Levon's claim that he broke up the band is bullshit, because he only broke up touring because touring was killing them. And it did. Richard Manuel took his life in 1986. And he hanged himself after a gig. And one of the reasons, of course, was his unbelievable addiction. One was with alcohol, which he drank cases a day. Can you imagine drinking cases of booze a day?
Stories of some people who build up their resistance to the point where they can drink like that.
And drugs on top of that. And I guess on top of, instead of playing hockey arenas like they used to, playing dinner theaters has to demoralize you. And I guess I can't speak for Richard, of course, he's gone, but I guess it just was too much and he took his life right after a gig. And you know when they all started, you know, Rick Danko, the bass player, died in 1999. Basically, his heart stopped from all his intake of chemicals and bad stuff. And of course, Levon passed from cancer that couldn't have been helped from all his partying. Love Levon, but you know, Robbie was right, except it didn't take the road to kill them. Well, it kind of did, because they kind of just did their stuff as the band without Robbie. And it's funny, because if for all these guys who say, like, hey, Robbie took all the credits from songwriting. Oh, this is funny, because first of all, they hardly wrote any of the songs on the three albums that they did when they got back together without Robbie. And when they did, all of a sudden, there's single credits on there. Like, Levon would have, oh, I helped write this with this other guy. Well, why don't you just do what you wanted to do before and put everybody on there then? Not so charitable when the foot is on your shoe. You know, and you're going like, well, me and him wrote it. These guys didn't write it. Oh, but didn't they do the arrangement? So it's different all of a sudden when you're cast as the leader and everything. So I had a real affinity with Robbie. I had a real affinity for, I always wanted to run the band like run my band like he did. It's just what he did is exactly what I would do. And that's why I really took it hard when he passed last week. I really took it. I still am. I listened to the album once. It's the only time I've ever listened to an album that we had once. Of course, I have heard this album 40 times or so before. I've watched The Last Waltz, by the way, probably 50 times since 1985. But I didn't. I made it through the album, but I broke down a couple times. And I said, I can't listen to this album anymore. Or not right now. The wound is just too exposed. So
It wasn't a great decision. We should have called, like I said, I should have said, let's do this when we do the memoriam, because there's always people now that are dying all the time in music. But I kind of wanted to do
this
it.
This is different.
This was different for me. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to say about like how an artist can mean so much to a person, and how he wanted to do his band, and how he looked at songwriting even before I was a songwriter. When I saw him speak on The Last Waltz and talk about stuff like that, and said, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. I want people to write. I don't want to be a dictator. I want to be cool like him, which I never could be. And I just wanted to hang out with friends and create music. Unfortunately, their story turned ugly, but it wasn't his fault. I saw this thing, and I swear to God, Rob, the day before we did the show last week, the night before we did the show, I just checked into Rolling Stone. And if you just check into Rolling Stone to the website, you'll know what I'm talking about, people. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. If you click into Robbie Robinson, and they'll have a thing on him about his obituary. Well, right to the front page and the home page, and it was this, and it just said, I could just make it out, because you'd have to scroll down, right? And I just made it out, and it said Robbie Robertson you could just make it out. And I was going, oh, that's not good. But he can't be, you know. Then I scrolled down a little bit. I wonder what Robbie's doing. And I scrolled down, and then I saw half of the picture, and it was a young picture. And I know when they show a young picture of a rock star, he's dead. And boy.
Damn it.
Did that hit me? So when, I knew this was going to happen.
All right.
So we go to the album. And this was done, this was the last full album that they did before they went on tour. That would be their last tour. They released, like I said, a compilation type of album of outtakes that was poorly received to just fulfill their contract in 1977. But this was the last album that they actually, studio album that they actually worked on. And then they toured for this album, and that was the tour where they did their final concert, The Last Waltz. So this is their last album. And you have to kind of give me leeway, because I'm not exactly impartial. When it comes to the band, as you can probably tell from all of this, I just think it's an amazing album. All the songs written by Robbie, as of course. And but this album is Garth's album. Garth has it on keyboards. He makes everything sound up to date. And I view this as a very sad album. And not just because it's the band's last studio album that they worked on together, but I find it sad because I really love this new direction they're heading in. I could see vistas of this music being played in the late 70s. And especially this was a type of music that they played on the studio side also of the Last Waltz album, which I loved. I said, oh, if they head in this direction, if they didn't stop, oh, the beautiful music they could have made. That's my thoughts.
If they had, you know, kept together and kept functioning,
that's all I can think of.
Better and better.
I totally agree, Rob. And that's a sadness that actually I've lived with this record like that. Ever since I've heard it, I've said, fuck, this is such a beautiful record to me. The songwriting is exquisite. It changes. The changes in, of course, the singing. I'm just talking about the chord changes that Robbie puts. I think the songs are amazingly written. I think, of course, when you talk about the band, Rick Danko and Levon Helm, and especially Richard Manuel, sing like nobody else. Nobody in the world ever has had three singers like that.
Three singers in the band.
Never. Yeah. Not the Beatles. They had John Lennon and George Harrison and Paul McCartney. All well, John and Paul, great singers in their own right, but to have three singers that sang like they do in the band, to be honest with you, the band are right below the Beatles to me. The band are, because you got the best musicians you can get, you got singers, there's like no weak spot in this fucking group. There's nothing weak about this group. They play their instruments as good as it can be played. You got the best keyboardist. You got an incredible bass player who plays fretless. Rick Danko plays fretless by this time, and which is pretty cool. And you got three of the best singers, especially Richard Emmanuel. I miss him so much. Sings like my voice always goes in this place at a certain time because of the dryness.
The dry air.
Yeah, the dry air. And he sings like nobody else. And yeah, I had a hard time getting through it, to be honest with you, this time. I loved every song. There's, of course, the song for Canada, Acadian Driftwood. Almost just took it off because for this one time, I had real trouble getting through it. It was just so beautiful to me. I'll let you speak. I'm sorry, Rob. I'll let you speak.
Oh, I was just going to say, he writes songs from start to finish. They're not bits and pieces. They're not. They're whole complete songs.
They're whole complete songs. I got that too. You know, I've listened to this album 30 times or whatever. I got that listen to this album, I think, with all the maturity that we've had, thinking like for the first time, wow, these songs are complete. These songs are like, you bring this song in. And then you just ask the band to make it better. And that's what they do. Oh, the song is complete. Now just make it better. And it's like they do. With the singing and the especially with the incredible keyboards sweetening of Garth Hudson, who's called Honey Boy, because he sweetens every track. And I'm not being facetious when I say that, because that's all I can think. Even when I first heard this record, 1985, 86, so that's 10, 20, 30, 35 years ago. It stood out even when I first heard it 35 years ago. I said, this is Garth's album, because he makes this, it's kind of like the old band songs, but he puts it more up to date with his synthesizer work, and he makes everything kind of like cinematic and beautiful. And I can't really describe it because there's so many keyboards being used, but he just makes it so beautiful, I guess is the word to use.
There was one song, first song on the second side, Ring Your Bell, I wrote down. It's a really cool, I don't know what the heck instrument that was, solo. I'm betting that was him.
By the way, there's no guitar in a song I love called Jupiter Hollow. There's two drummers, Richard Manuel and Yvonne Helm, playing drums. Jupiter Hollow in the midnight sun. And you got Garth playing a barrage of keyboards. You've got Robbie playing the clavinet, which sounds real. And it's about as prog as the band's going to get. And the only stringed instrument is Rick Danko playing the bass. And other than that, it's mostly just keyboards and drums. And I'm going, fuck, if they would have went in this direction. And that's all I could think about for the last 30
years.
That
was such a strange song. If they could.
But then I hear, I know it's such a strange song that you think there's no way such a straightforward Canadiana type band. I call it Canadiana because I don't call it Americana, which I was going to rant about because the influences musically are very Canadian. I'm not going to go there. But their music has always been very Canadiana, very rootsy. You would never think a song like this would work with the band, and yet it's one of the highlights of the record. And you can see the future. You can see, oh, if they did shit like this.
Yeah.
But then Robbie said, you know what? Bands have a lifetime. And I realize that we had run our course. And when you run your course, you try not to extend it, or you end up... what happened, which you end up having hard feelings, which happened anyways, but then you end up people dying from being on the road. So he even says, yeah, just like the Beatles say, you know, we knew it was the end. He realizes, 1976, 77 was the end. And it took me a while to realize, but it really was the end. You can only sometimes stay with a band and have that so long, because Robbie dropped out. Like, and he didn't, like, he dropped out from making songs like this from, like, he didn't do a solo album until 1987. He worked on Martin Scorsese soundtracks and organized them. But that's one of the other things, is that ending the band kind of stopped him from writing actual songs for like 10 years. And I'm just imagining, he is so great at it. Like, you hear this album, Rob, and like you said, like, they're so put together. Fuck, if he did an album like that, even every 2 years, I'd be like, oh my God, I could hardly wait for it. On his own, but he just kind of, like, I don't know. We all have our different roads we go, and some of them are not what people want.
That was a surprise when he did the solo album. Like, it was like, I think a lot of people have forgotten about the band and forgotten about him.
Yeah,
and,
I agree. And it just rebooted. It just rebooted because it was such a big hit, and there was a couple of hit songs on it, and it rejuvenated his career, rejuvenated interest in the band, and then all that has just snowballed since 1987. I bought that album, by the way, the first day it was released on on CD in 1987. I took it home. I just thought it was the bee's knees, and it was different. It was no longer like this. It was very it was just very modern, and his music has been very modern, but I like that because it doesn't appeal to a lot of people who like the band. But I like that he says, no, why would I want to do what I did before?
I wasn't going to go look for guys who played like the other guys. Yeah. Look for new guys.
That's exactly the point. If I wanted to do the music like the band, I would either get the guys from the band or get guys who played like them. But no, I want to do techno. I want to do like Indian music. He's Native American music because he is Native Canadian. So he wanted to do that. I actually have appreciated every album he has done because it's not like the band. And that's risky and gutsy in itself to go against the grain and go what everybody else wants and just say, no, I don't want to. I did that already. I did that for 10 years. Why do you want me to go back there?
More of the same. No, I understand why.
Yeah.
Let's twist again like we did last summer. I know full well why.
Now, I could go into a whole bunch of stuff about... I will talk about this one thing, because I love every song on this record. I really do. But I'm not impartial. Please remember that I love everything that the band does. Even when the band does something which people call shitty, I love. But I'm telling you, I have never heard a better... No, not better. This is one of the best lead vocals I've ever heard on a record, which is It Makes No Difference by Rick Danko, drives me to tears every time I hear it. And I don't even care what he's saying. Even though what he's saying with the words by Robbie are drop dead gorgeous, it's how he sings it that just floors me every time I hear it.
And the way it starts off kind of stark and...
Where he sounds so much in pain, but that's just his voice. And you can
that
feel
was
the pain.
Really good characterization of the mood, the feeling, the character of the song.
Embodying the song.
Yeah.
I think it is one of the greatest vocals of all
time. That one, actually, the first couple of listens, it kind of passed me by. I thought it was slow and ponderous, and I could pick up a few phrases here and there, but it didn't really stick with me. And then when I got the lyrics and read them on the third listen, I couldn't ignore this song anymore. I literally could not.
And, you know, the songs are long. You know, there's no song less than Only Ophelia, which is a great song, but only that is less than four. Well, no, Ring Your Bell is 3 minutes and 55 seconds. But Ophelia is unbelievably, incredibly short at 3 minutes and 32 seconds. Everything is between 4 and 6 minutes and longer. So.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that, though.
At 4 to 6 minutes, I'm expecting some long instrumental arrangements or something. And no, it just feels like a normal song.
Yeah, it does. So that's kind of my take on it. I think Acadian Driftwood is also like the second best Canadian national anthem ever. You've got, of course, our great national anthem of O Canada. But you also have Four Strong Winds by Ian Tyson. And you have the Canadian Railroad Trilogy by
Gordon Lightfoot.
We've had some great alternative songs, but I think in my estimation, and of course, It's not a good one because I'm such a fan, but Acadian driftwood to me is, it even moves me more than Old Canada does. Acadian driftwood, I could not make it through this song this week. I just couldn't. That's how beautiful it is. When they say the land of snow, it always gets to me. There's always lines in here. Robbie is a great, I don't know what you call it, not a poet, but a street poet type of thing.
His rhyming, his lyrics, the rhythm he has, they totally fascinated me. The opening song, Forbidden Fruit, has five verses to it. They're all beautifully written. Three of them I could draw some meaning from. Two of them, the last two, I just totally couldn't connect with the subject of the song as being relevant, but it didn't matter because it was just... he was saying them in a language that I couldn't understand. But it was just, it was, the way he puts his words together is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's a person who is at the top of his game, yeah. To be honest with you. He's been put in the position of writing all the songs, and he's had pretty much a four-year break from writing because they haven't done an original album since 1971. He needed that break because he wrote four albums in a row, boom, boom, boom. And you can see that he's had that break and he's just couldn't write a bad line if his life depended
on it.
Yeah,
like I say, really developed to do songs like this, you have to go through them quite a few times.
But there's still sadness to me when I listen to that because it's like, oh, fuck, all those albums that could... See, I have stayed with that thought for 35 years in that I listened to this album and I listened to the last side of The Last Waltz, and I always go, fuck, you shouldn't leave the zone when you're in the zone. You know what I mean? You take a rest when you're drained, but to leave the zone and take a big break when you're in the zone like this
they hear what they were doing and how beautiful it was?
You know what? That's a good point. I don't think they could. Robbie maybe could, but I don't think the other guys could.
I think they might have taken it for granted.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Rags and Bones. I still don't know who is the Ragman.
Ragman is a guy who used to, who would come by and he would sell clothes and stuff.
Okay.
And a lot of times he'd be singing to attract people. And that kind of stuff.
Okay, kind of like a hawker.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I noticed that the one thing when I listened to it is the songs were all distinct first time when I heard it. I kind of attached something to each song, and then next time I played it was like I actually remember the songs, which
right.
There's a bunch of albums. It takes a few listens.
You see, I have to go 35 years to remember that. So your input is very important because you're listening for a first time. I haven't had that first listen. I don't even remember what the first listen was 35 years ago, other than little things like, oh, I like this and I remember I like that. But I don't remember what that first, that was like a lifetime ago to me when I first listened to it. So to hear what you think the first time is actually pretty important to me.
Yeah, that is unusual in that, like I say, a lot of albums, my first listen, I kind of fade in and out, and I remember some songs or some parts, or sometimes I remember nothing.
Like a jazz album.
But this one is maybe only one or two songs that I didn't remember for the second listen.
Yeah, well, that's good. That means that the melody or the subject matter stuck with you, usually.
Yes, and the third album, like I say, that was the lyrics listen, and then after that, it was like it went up an entire star.
Yeah. Once you've hit that peak, and you've assimilated everything, this is like with every record, or good record I should say, and you hit that peak, and then everything hits you, and you realize you're encompassing the whole record now, instead of the first three listens where you take a little bit of this, a little bit of that,
yeah,
and then everything comes together, and you go, I get it now, I get the whole record now.
Yeah. Right, I sit down, I pour myself a drink, I listen to one side, take a break, listen to the second side. Yeah.
We all have our ways.
There's casual listens and there's sit-down listens.
Well, there is. That's exactly a good point. There are different ways Well, people who listen to records, yeah, like we do, you'd probably have to go to the 70s. A lot of people listen to, like we do, in the 70s and 80s, maybe not so now. People who listen to the show probably do. But especially doing this show, I mean, you don't do, when you do this show, you'd listen differently. And what I mean by is that you got a week. Sometimes you know the record, sometimes you don't. Most of the time you don't. And there's just a specific way people will listen to it. Your way is totally different from mine, but we have our own way. My way is always, first of all, when I listen to it, I never listen to have the lyrics, because I want to hear it.
Yeah,
I want to hear it without lyrics.
I go casual listen first, which
yes,
is like put it on the background, do some other stuff.
Don't think about it too much. Yeah. Second listen, again, not too hardy, but I have the lyrics this time. But I don't go full in, I hate this or I love this.
Okay, I wait for the third before I pull the lyrics out.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, that's a good way, too. You know, it all depends on the person.
I do a first and second casual listens.
And third and fourth is like just trying to pull everything in so I get it, which it happens every time.
Yes.
Trying to pull it all in, and it always happens that way, whether I like it or dislike it.
Each listen, I got the notebook in front of me and write down different things on different listens, and by the end of it, I have like half a page of notes.
Right.
So,
luckily, I kind of had a week off because I didn't really have to listen to this record, having listened to it. So, and usually we don't do a record that we listen to so much because, first of all, it taints our
like
it
has with mine. Yeah, I'm just going to come in and say the same thing I've always felt for the past 30 years. I love this record.
Exactly. But also, it's just, I don't know, it's not as exciting as listening to something new. But, you know, I haven't listened to this album in so long, and it's such a warm album. It's such a warm, to me, it's a very warm album. I think that's Garth Hudson with his decorations on the of music everywhere, making it such a warm, inviting album that it's an album that when you go, oh, I like to listen to that. Yeah, that album, no matter even when it's really bleak, it makes me feel good. And this is not too much bleakness, but it makes no difference. It's not exactly a happy song, as is really, even though Forbidden Fruit kind of has an upbeat, it's not good because it's about addiction in the band, which is very bad. But there is a warmness. There's a warmness in Richard Manuel's vocals, which is very attracting. It's a very attractive album to listen to, is what I'm saying. So it's not a hard album to listen to, but I get that. That there was now, I'm not going to name the album, but there was an album that I wanted to do by a certain artist, which we haven't done that artist yet. And Rob said, no, we're not doing that. I know that album too well.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, yeah, I agree. Like, if, and I only make this exception because Robbie passed, or else we would not have done this album. But these things happen, unfortunately.
This has to be done.
So I give this, I still don't think it's a perfect album. Compared, and that's only if it'd be a perfect album for most artists in the world, but compared with other band albums, you know, the first two and everything, but it gets pretty close. I give it 4.5 stars, so close to classic, but it's I don't know what it's missing, but I've always rated it 4.5, always.
Yeah, the only. I can't really call it a criticism. It's just a thing that I kind of felt was when I was doing my casual listens without knowing what the lyrics were. Musically, it was good, but it was just a little bit dry or barren. A little bit... there wasn't as much there as I was kind of expecting. Like, Garth Hudson stood out. And the other guys, they played really good. But
they didn't stand out. Yeah. And you know what? That's maybe why I have trepidation in giving that extra half star, is because I think that may be the reason is that the other records are very band. This one is very Robbie's songs and most definitely Garth's keyboards. And the guys, of course, never play bad, but they don't stand out as far as their musicianship is concerned either.
Yeah, that's about the only thing. I really like the songwriting on this. Like I say, it's a different listens between not having the lyrics and having the lyrics.
You know what? This totally is a this is one of the best, and I've listened to hundreds of albums. This is one of the best studies you could have for a student on how to write songs. And I'm being serious. I would bypass even Beatles albums and say, no, if you're alone and you want to write songs, don't even take the early band albums, which are masterpieces. Listen to this album, because this the songwriting here is just one guy writing these songs, but doesn't it sound like an orchestra? And I know it's the other guys playing it, but you still have that huge basis of the song there. I would give this to a kid and say, if you can write songs like, if you can try and write songs like this, you're made.
Yeah. Listen to this. This is what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
I need some other stuff. Listen to this. This is what you're not supposed to be doing.
Put that Grand Funk Railroad away. So what's your rating on this?
I started off about 3.5 when I was doing the casual listens, and it went up to... it's still not a 4.5 for me. Thing.
Well, so that's okay. So it is what it is for you.
I hesitate to call it a 4 because the songwriting's so good, but musically it is. There's something not missing, just not as strong as it could be.
3.5 is a very good album, which is not a bad. It's not. It's
yeah, but no, this is a 4. This is easily a 4.
Oh, 4 is an excellent, yeah, which is I think it is, and I think it's 4.5, which is excellent, and 1/2, which means it's almost a classic, but not. But I'm not the best person to even give stars on this record for, because probably before I even heard it, it was going to get a 4.5 when I was young. Because there are some artists, as you probably have, that you just can't be...
Yeah, you've lost your impartiality.
You've lost your impartiality.
You love everybody, them, and that's just it.
Everybody has those bands. You know, the Beatles for me, and Dylan, and I have a few, but 5 at least in the band. And, you know, and I just can't. Springsteen I can. But there's only like 3 or 4 artists where I go, you know what, I find it really hard to do. Even when Dylan's doing shit, I think it's fucking incredible. Anyways, yeah, this really isn't about reviewing an album. This is really more like paying homage. But it sure is a joy to listen to the band at any time. So, and I hope, Rob, that was, you liked it, because, and you did, because it means a lot when you like a record that means so much to me.
I like the songwriting.
There you go. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, fuck. It's so funny, though. I know we've talked about for like 45 minutes already on Robbie, but it's just, it's the first time after listening to this album for so many times that for some reason, and maybe it was having Robbie on my mind, I don't know, but the songwriting to me, and I was listening to it, maybe with a more critical view, or a more observant view, because this is about Robbie's passing and a eulogy to him, that I was going, wow. First time when I listened to this record, I was going, fuck. It's Garth's keyboards, which I always thought, but it's Robbie's bass of this, of that's holding this up with his amazing songwriting all alone, all by himself. And it's just like, wow. Like I said, Class 101 in songwriting, as far as I'm concerned, given this record.
Yeah, I can't disagree. There's too many songs. They just move me.
Yeah.
Hobo Jungle, I loved.
It does help that the songs are being sung so amazingly. I mean, it really does. Imagine if you had a bad or even a mediocre singer singing these songs. They might not go over as well as it does.
The more you do something, the better you get at it. And Robbie Robertson would be writing songs and just getting better and better at it. And
I think in a way, hitting his peak in a way, because everybody expected nothing from him because he'd done so much already. And yet he gave so much of this album when he didn't. Everybody thought, wow, he must be spent after making classic after classic. And yet he comes up with this. And then again, it's like, okay, let's give us more. No, that's it.
No.
Sorry. That's it for a long while.
I got to take a break.
Yeah. And when he came back, he never did that type of songwriting again. He did amazing in his solo work, but it wasn't the same. And I appreciate that. And I never hold it against him, because I would probably do the same thing. I would move on, because he made his point.
Yeah, yeah. Do the same thing for so long.
Yeah.
But like I say, you know, in getting better with the songwriting, there he was still just as good, but he got different.
Yes. Yeah. He got different. That's the point. He could have made another music from Big Pink or something. He didn't. He made something totally for the mid-70s. Yeah. Totally different band sound. How do you reinvent like something so great like the band? But they did it. They did it as a group, but he did it with his songwriting. So, wow. Well, that's our show for today. Now, next week, we will officially start our new theme, which was supposed to start with this episode, but it didn't, did it?
No, it didn't. We're going to keep our fingers crossed that it starts with the next episode.
Now, the theme, I'm going to tell you what the theme is. The theme, which is now three albums instead of four, is albums produced by Todd Rundgren. Ooh. And I am really excited about that. I know Rob's excited about
that. There were a lot of them.
Yes. That's why I wanted four records, but then Robbie had to die. So
can I even predict one of them?
Yeah, there's going to be one.
Okay, good.
Now, let's just say the artist was already mentioned today on the program.
Excellent.
So if you want to re-listen to all the artists that were mentioned today on the program, that artist will be one of the albums we will be reviewing. And I love that artist.
You know, I love annoying vagueness.
I am really excited about it, though. And I told you last week I had planned this for...
Yeah, because Todd Rundgren is one of those names that comes up on all sorts of albums. Yeah. Like,
oh my God, there's 50 albums we could do right off the bat if we wanted to, and I had to pick three.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking producing here, but also, you know, just appearing on.
Yeah. So, but he's produced some amazing records. So, just because we do these three doesn't mean we won't do more produced by Todd Rundgren albums in the future. Except, how do you choose? Holy smokes, I had a hard time choosing, but okay. Anyways, we're really excited about that theme, but we're going to have to leave for this week. Again, even though it had almost no segments, we still get the same type of time.
Consistent time.
So until then, everybody, till next week, take care, and remember, twilight is the loneliest part of the day. Just right around.